Eli Wallach is getting an honorary Oscar on Saturday, a Lifetime Achievement Award. The nearly 95-year-old actor has appeared in more than 4 dozen films over the past 5 decades. We're going to listen back to an excerpt of the interview I recorded with him in 1990. Tennessee Williams gave Wallach one of his first big breaks, casting him in a production of The Rose Tattoo. Wallach made his film debut in Baby Doll, which was also written by Williams. In 1960, Wallach was the heavy in The Magnificent Seven. 6 years later, he played another heavy in a film of heavies, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. His other movies include The Misfits, The Victors, How the West Was Won, and Godfather III. This year, he was featured in The Ghost Rider and Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps. Wallach was a charter member of the Actors Studio, where the actors practiced a technique that became known as the method. Here's what he had to say about the method.
All of it basically was an antidote from the cliché, from the conventional. You know, when an actor says, "I remember," and he always looks up the sky, you think, what is he seeing up there? But that was a signal that he's remembering. And the method basically was to destroy all that and to get to the truth of a situation. So the studio was like a laboratory. We were professional actors in the theater, but we could go there and work out. I could go and do a scene from Hamlet with Millie Dunnick, for example. I'd do the closet scene. I never forget taking Sir Laurence Olivier to the Actors Studio, and he said, "Well, I can see you're nitpicking now, you know." And I said, "Well, you did it too. You have your way of working." Olivier, for example, gets into a character by putting on the externals. He puts on the nose and the robe and so on, and that's the way he gets it. Others say, which comes first? Do you find the truth of the situation? I've played all sorts of characters, bandits. I've played a lot of bandits. And one time I figured out, you always see them holding up the train or breaking into the bank. You never see what they do with the money. It's always the pursuit of it. I wanted to show the reverse side of the coin. I wanted to show the wealth this guy ostentatiously had. So I put on red silk shirts and gold teeth and silver saddles. And that's where the method helps, a kind of a technique that you work at to bring a character to life.
Was that The Magnificent Seven?
That was The Magnificent Seven, yeah.
Since you've brought up how many bandits you've played, let me bring up a couple of films you've played them in. One was The Magnificent Seven, and you played the head of a band of Mexican outlaws,
right,
who raids a village and keeps this village under the outlaws' control. And the Magnificent Seven is a group of kind of renegade freelance fighters who save this Mexican village. How'd you get cast in that role?
First of all, you were
Mexican.
I don't really know. I know that when I first read the script, I said, well, I want to play the crazy, it was based on the Seven Samurai.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play the crazy samurai. Oh, no, they said, that's the love interest. Horst Buchholz is going to play it. What do you want me to play? They said, the head bandit. I said, well, in the Japanese movie, you just see his horse's hoofs, and he's a man with an eye patch. I don't want to play that. Then I read the script carefully, and I come in right into town in the first minute of that movie, shoot somebody, and ride out. The next 50 minutes of that movie are devoted to me saying, is he coming back? When is he coming? I said, I'll do it. And I loved it. I used to arrive on the set early in the morning, put on my outfit, get on my horse with my 35 bandits, and we'd go for an hour ride through the brush in Tepoztlan in Mexico. And I loved it.
Did you have to learn gunplay and horse riding for the role?
No. If it says I shoot somebody, I shoot them. I'll never forget what my son said. Yul Brynner shot and killed me in this movie. And my son was about 7, and he said to me, gee, Dad, couldn't you outdraw Yul Brynner? I said, Peter, when you read the script, you read whether you're shot or not shot. So I love those kind of films. They're fun.
Now, another famous Western that you did is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Right.
Now, this is the most celebrated of the spaghetti Westerns.
Correct.
And the director, Sergio Leone, is now considered one of the great directors of our time. He was not known, though, when you worked with him on The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Did you think of him as a great or potentially great director then?
No, when I was making a film in California, when the agent out there said, there's an Italian here who wants you to be in a movie. I said, what kind of movie? He said, a Western. I said, he said, a spaghetti Western. I said, that's an anomaly. That's like Hawaiian pizza. I don't know. He said, he wants you to look at a few minutes of one of his other movies. And I looked at a few minutes and I said, I'll do it. Where do you want me to go? He said, I want you in Rome on such and such a date. And I arrived and I spent the next 4.5 months working every day on that movie. And it was an exhilarating experience.
You played a Mexican in The Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Yep.
So once again, you had to do a Mexican accent. But it was a light one. It was kind of light, yes. Mexican accent. I want to play a short clip from the movie.
Oh.
Okay. And this is a scene. If anyone remembers the story, I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, you and Clint Eastwood have the scam going. There's a big price on your head.
Right.
So Clint Eastwood brings you into the law. And just as they're about to hang you, he cuts you loose and you both ride away and you split the bounty.
Exactly.
So you split the price that was on your head. So this is after the first time when you're about to be hung, Clint Eastwood frees you and you're splitting up the bounty.
Right.
There are two kinds of people in the world, my friend. Those with a rope around their neck and the people who have the job of doing the cutting. Listen, the neck at the end of the rope is mine. I run the risks. So the next time I want more than half.
You may run the risks, my friend, but I do the cutting. If we cut down my percentage. Cigar? Liable to interfere with my aim.
But if you miss, you had better miss very well. Whoever double-crosses me and leaves me alive, he understands nothing about Tuco. Nothing.
I love that little sadistic laugh at the end.
But I don't think it's a very good Mexican accent. It's standardized. It isn't. I didn't do the cliche of I think maybe I do la third. You know, I don't. I didn't do that. I wanted specifically to be clear in what I was saying.
In the Italian westerns that you made, especially in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, everything's dubbed, right?
Right.
Afterwards.
Right.
So in these international casts, everybody's talking in their own language,
exactly.
And it's dubbed in afterwards.
It's the Tower of Babel. It really is. But you wait until they stop speaking, or you know what the sense of what they're saying.
Why do they do it that way?
Because it's easier and cheaper. An airplane flies over, they don't stop a scene. They drop a wrench in the middle of a scene. It makes a noise. They don't care. Two other Italians over in a corner will be arguing about something. One director said to an Italian actor who's playing with me, he said to me, the Italian actor said, I don't like Americans. I said, why? He said, I lost my arm in the war. I said, well, I don't know. What could I do? He was not an actor. So the director said, I want you to count from 1 to 10 angrily. So the man said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then when they dub it in, he's playing a wonderful scene, an angry actor. Well, that's movies.
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is really one of the most kind of brutal, sadistic westerns.
No, it's done with tongue in cheek.
I know. It is. I know there's a lot of humor in it. But what kind of mood did Leone tell you that he wanted?
One of the things he said to me, he said, I want every shot to be done like Vermeer. I want the light to come in from the side windows. And he said to me, I don't want you to have your gun in a holster. I said, where will I put it? He said, with a lanyard around your neck. I said, oh. And then it dangles between my knees, right? He said, yeah. He said, when you want it, you twist your shoulders, and I cut, and the gun is in your hand. I said, show me. He put it around his neck. He twisted his shoulder. He missed the gun. It hit him in the groin. He said, keep it in your pocket. So that's
It's interesting that you became a kind of action hero when you were probably in your 50s already.
When The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
And The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
You must have been in your 40s in The Magnificent Seven. But, you know, like today, most action heroes are a lot younger. It's like they start off in their 20s and 30s playing that kind of role.
Yeah.
Did you feel like it was an odd match?
Well, you wear very tight pants in these movies, and to get up on a horse, they'd always have to cut. I'd put my foot in the stirrup, but then they'd cut away to somebody looking at me, and the next thing I was on the horse. See? So, no, I tell you, In The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, I did most of the stunts, and they were very dangerous. I was sitting on a horse with a noose around my neck, and Clint's supposed to shoot the rope. Then they put a little charge of dynamite in the rope, and it would explode. And then I would ride off on this horse. I said, did you put any cotton in the horse's ears? They said, what do you mean, cotton in the horse's ears? I said, he can hear the explosion. He's going to be terrified. My hands are tied behind me. Well, they didn't do it. They shot the rope, and that horse took off. Now I'm riding, not using reins, just using my knees, and praying that that horse would eventually stop. And eventually he did, but it was frightening. The horses I get in America, in American films, are trained. They know how to hit their marks, they shift their weight, they look great. But when you get into a foreign movie and they bring out a horse, I say, I want the gentlest, sweetest horse. And he usually turns around and looks at me when I sit on him and thinks, oh, God, I've got this guy for 3 weeks. You know? But I like riding.
I want to thank you so much for talking with
us. A pleasure.
Eli Wallach recorded in 1990. On Saturday, he's getting an honorary Academy Award for Lifetime Achievement. Fresh Air's executive producer is Jenny Miller. I'm Terry Gross.